The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
If you are passionate about food and how it supports well-being and health, learn more. The Institute for Optimum Nutrition has been training nutritional therapists for 35 years on its highly acclaimed and accredited diploma courses. Start your new career in nutritional therapy, one that will make a difference and help others achieve their health goals. Train with the home of nutritional therapy education. Find us online and give us a call or click on the IOM banner on the UK Health Radio homepage.
Hello and welcome to Talk Fertility, a show where we do just that, talk about fertility. I'm Natalie Silverman, host of the Fertility Podcast, which I launched in 2015, once successfully pregnant after having fertility treatment.
And I'm Kate Davis, a trained fertility nurse and founder of Your Fertility Journey, where I work one-to-one with women and couples to help them understand and optimise their fertility.
Now, Kate, we've spent all day together recording our first bout of chats for this brand new show, Talk Fertility, which is all about us talking about fertility.
Yep.
How many miles have you travelled today?
Well, it was 2.5 hours.
So about 150 miles,
yeah.
I'd say.
And maybe a bit more.
How many hours sleep have you had?
Two.
2 hours sleep.
2 hours sleep.
What time is it now?
2 hours sleep.
What time is it
now?
It's
now 10:20.
Right, now the good thing is, the fact that it's 10:20 in the evening means that we can only probably speak to people that we're friends with.
Yeah.
Because
it would be indecent otherwise.
It would be. We've had dinner and I think it's really great that we're now joined by Lucy and Kobe from Dr. Fertility.
Hi.
Partly because we're all friends, but partly because you've been working very closely with these guys. Ladies, just explain a little bit about what Dr. Fertility is. And I must just say that we are in Lucy's very vacuous kitchen, which is lovely, but vacuous when it comes to recording. It sounds very spacious.
It does.
Which is just demonstrative of what a lovely space this is, and fresh and clean, and lots of very shiny surfaces.
Big words at this time of night.
I know, yeah. I'm surprising myself.
I'm glad you like it, lady.
So Dr. Fertility is 2-3 years old now?
2 years old. So
officially 2 years old.
Yeah. So, well, basically, Lucy and I used to live together. So we lived together in a flat in Didsbury, Manchester, for 4.5 years. We were in our 30s, single.
There's a bit of Bridget Jones style going on here.
Yes, yeah. We'd often go out on a Friday night to go and meet guys, and then we'd end up just saying, should we just go home and eat cheese and drink red wine?
Yeah, we just wanted to be together, didn't we?
Yeah, yeah. So we...
I'll just add that Lucy and Kirby aren't actually a couple.
No.
I'm sorry.
No, it's not a bad thing. They're a working couple, aren't you?
Yes, yes. But we love each other very much.
We do. It's like having another husband. I really like it.
So we lived together in our 30s and we had lots of people commenting about our biological ticking clocks.
Yes. And there was
what? So friends or family?
Well, not family so much for me, but it was friends and people at work.
Okay. So I was in a role and I managed a guy who came up to me one day and he said to me, Lucy, I'm really worried about you. And I said, oh, really? He said, yes, I'm really worried about you. I'm worried about your fallopian tubes and I think you need to find yourself a husband.
I can't believe a man said that to you.
Yeah.
Why are your fallopian tubes?
He was concerned about my fallopian tubes. And
you
I remember
did work in the kind of pharma world. So
yeah, so I was working in the pharmaceutical industry at the time. I said to him, well, that's great. Thank you very much. I'm actually a little bit worried about your job and I think you need to get back to it. I mean, you and I had lots of comments like this.
Yeah, we did.
About our biological clock ticking. And we were, at the time, fairly resilient to it, but what it did do was make us think a little bit more and do some more research.
Well, we were just kind of like, well, where do you go if you've got questions about your fertility? And at that time, which was about probably like, what, 7 years ago? There wasn't anywhere.
You would go to your doctor. That's the only place that you would go.
And actually, or maybe your friends.
Well, yeah, a lot of people go to Dr. Google.
Yeah, they do. Which is just full of conflicts and information and lots of products making huge claims.
Unsubstantiated claims.
Like, we love the herbal tampon, don't we?
The herbal tampons that claim to unblock your fallopian tubes at £60 a pack.
Oh my goodness, how many?
I think it's 3 in a pack, so.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So yeah, so we kind of were like, actually, this is a great opportunity because my background is e-commerce and marketing. So I've got 18 years experience. My last role was e-commerce director at AO. You know, it was an amazing experience, but at the end of the day, I was selling fridges. And it was kind of like, well, this is for me, something that gives me more of a purpose. I can help people. Obviously, Lucy's background is very different to mine.
So I'm completely different to Kobe. I'm a pharmacist by background. I went on to do a PhD, so I really enjoy the science side of things and the research. And then
I'm surprised you not put the Dr. Lucy.
Oh, I was getting a bit shy about that.
I'm surprised you not put the science voice on.
The science voice, we'd like a little bit of science.
Let's have the science bit. Okay. Let's have the science bit to Dr. Fertility.
Very comfortable with the science voice. So yeah, I've had a variety of roles in community pharmacy, hospital pharmacy, and then in the pharmaceutical industry working for big companies like Novartis and Baxter Healthcare, where we're really careful about regulations and making sure that everything we do is accurate, fair and balanced, and we don't make unsubstantiated claims. And then you go onto Google and it's really bizarre.
Yeah.
And I don't think people necessarily realise that, because I do think we have, whilst we are wary at times of the internet, I do think when we're researching products, for example, we'd assume that if there's something on Amazon or something, that what is there and what is being written about it is factual. And that's something that you're kind of not disproving.
I guess so. And I think from my background, I'm probably very critical. But if you don't have that background, you might think, oh, it's on the internet, so therefore it's okay. Mm. So we're really careful about the products we pick for the site, and we put them through our internal quality control process. And then we speak to experts like Kate. We ask for their opinion on things. And putting a product on our site, we really want to make sure that we're giving patients or customers the right products and helping them to make an informed decision about what's right for them.
Because people say, oh, look, how are you different from Amazon? And it's kind of like, well, Amazon is very transactional, and you know, they'll have, you know, products that you can go on there and easily find, and there'll be a lower price. But what we do is actually we give like a balanced view of the product sourcing.
And I love it because you say what Dr. Fertility love about this product, and it is completely balanced and fair.
Yeah.
And I really like that.
So it's kind of, it's not just the benefits, it's actually we'll pull out the drawbacks.
Yeah. And that, I think that's really 100%. Important to give that balanced view. And the other thing that we're really passionate about is not all products are suitable for everybody.
No.
So we try and make it as clear as possible. So, for example, if you have PCOS, then some products won't be suitable for you. So if there is a product on our site that won't be suitable for a certain type of person, we will pull that out and make that obvious, because we don't want people wasting their money on things that aren't good for them.
No, definitely.
And that information elsewhere is often just in the small print right at the very bottom, and people don't see it.
If at all.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's so crucial that it's front and centre.
Yeah, definitely.
To make women can make informed choices. What you hope with what you've put together with the website is that people come to you at the point that they're literally thinking about trying to conceive.
Absolutely.
Not once they know there's a problem. It's if you're wanting to have a family, there's information here and then products to help you at every stage. And I know, Kate, with your and the work that you do with, for example, ovulation monitors, that's something that you guys can help people understand more about.
Yeah, well, I think there was some research that came out recently that showed that people spend more time planning their summer holiday than they do planning to get pregnant.
Oh, I can well imagine.
And we are really passionate about raising awareness about getting pregnancy body ready. Mm. But also, if you started to try to get pregnant, there's so much you can do to get yourself in the best shape, which will help you to conceive, but also help you during your pregnancy and also maximise your chances of getting pregnant.
Yeah, so we developed a 5-step guide. It was a couple's guide to getting pregnant, to help educate people on all those positive things they can do to help maximise their chances. So Lucy and Kate, you wrote that together, which obviously is a great resource for people who are even just thinking about it, because what people don't realise is you need to start making positive changes 3 to 6 months before you even start trying.
Absolutely. All about egg quality and sperm quality.
Yeah, so a lot of guys especially think that they're sort of good at the weekend, they'll have super sperm on a Monday, but
that's not the way.
Not really how it works.
No.
The sperm production factory takes approximately three months.
But you've also been highlighting job significant affecting things like sperm health? I know that there's examples of specific jobs that can have detrimental effects.
Yeah, so in terms of the couple's guide, there's five steps, as Kobe mentioned. So the first step is sort of prepare your bodies and all the things that you need to think about to get your both of your bodies in the best possible shape. And we do cover occupations. So for men, if they have jobs where they drive a lot or they work in really hot environments, so they might work in a kitchen or a foundry, that can not help sperm health because the scrotum must be kept slightly cooler.
Absolutely.
Which is why it's outside the body. Yeah, exactly. So it's educating guys on if you think your job might be detrimental to your sperm health, to talk to your manager and maybe try and make some adjustments if you're trying to get pregnant.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I know you've got a unproven theory about...
I do.
Sperm health. Is it sperm health?
Yes, it is. And I can't... It's not mine. It's the lady that I did my fertility training with, and it was... She's always sworn by it, and it's that men who have hot hands and thick thighs are going to have poorer quality sperm, and that's because the scrotum is kept at a hotter temperature.
Oh, okay. That does make sense.
Yeah. So if you've got... And I can often tell if I shake a man's hand and their hand's hot and they've got these thick thighs, I'm like, oh, I'm not quite sure about your sperm quality.
Do they often reveal that is the problem?
Is there any data to support this?
No, there's absolutely none. So it's anecdotal. And I don't know, because actually, you know, it could be that I'm shaking hands with...
A rugby player who's...
Yeah.
Nervous to see it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nervous to see the luscious cake.
Could be many different reasons, but it's an unproven theory, very much anecdotal, but interesting.
So the next step, which is a great step to talk about, is get cycle savvy.
Yeah.
So Dr. Fertility developed a educational health awareness campaign called Get Cycle Savvy with Kate Davis.
With me.
Yes.
So let's talk a bit about that, because the problem that a lot of women realise is that they don't know their cycle until they try to conceive, when they realise that maybe they've got no idea of how long their cycle is, when they ovulate, they don't understand what happens. And we know that when you're trying to conceive and there's all that pressure put on the right time to have sex, the implications that then has on your sex life. So what were you trying to convey with it?
Well, our hypothesis was that women who were trying to get pregnant didn't have the basic understanding of the things that could help them to maximise their chances. So we developed a questionnaire for women to answer. So it was 10 simple questions based on sort of key information that they would need to know. And we got, was it 18,000?
Yeah, so 18,000 responses, which was just fantastic.
We were really surprised at the amount of interest, weren't we?
Yeah, and it confirmed what, you know, our hypothesis that actually there is a real lack of understanding when it comes to basic, you know, fertility information.
And I think a lot of that is perpetuated by us as medical professionals as well, because, you know, we're always talking about day 14 of ovulation day of a 28-day cycle, but very few women have a 28-day cycle, and very few women will ovulate on day 14.
Yeah.
So that they're, we're giving mixed messages.
But also, I think if you just sort of go back a step as well, when we're at school, we're all taught how not to get pregnant.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we don't really have any education about how to get pregnant. Now,
and as well, I would say, like, I was on the pill for 15 years. So I came off the pill a year before I thought I wanted to start trying for a baby, and up until that point I didn't have a clue how long my cycles were, you know, I had absolutely no information about my fertility.
And so with Cycle Savvy, you're explaining, are you, the products we mentioned, like ovulation monitors, the products that people can use, as well as the things they need to be aware of?
So what we did is we had this questionnaire that we gave out to women. And then what we did was we used video to answer the questions and give people... So the first part of the video showed the results to show, like, in a lot of cases, a lot of women didn't know this, and this is how many women in the survey didn't. And then we got Kate, who was our expert, to talk about the answer. So we used that as an educational campaign.
Yeah, so it was talking about things like, products you could use, but also natural fertility indicators that you can measure yourself,
mm-hmm.
And as well PCOS, which mm-hmm. Is polycystic ovarian syndrome, which can affect, well, the official number is like 1 in 10, but some people believe it's 1 in 5.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. We've discussed this quite a lot, haven't we? Like, how many is it? So we sort of say now it's in between 1 in 5 to 1 in 10 women. Yeah. Who we think
it's
they
definitely
have.
On increase, and that's only the ones that we know.
I was going to say, because there's an issue with the diagnosis.
Oh, it takes it, on average it takes 13 years to get a diagnosis of PCOS.
But that was one of the reasons you
13 years.
Set up your practice, wasn't it? Because you felt frustrated that there wasn't support for the for women.
I was
with PCOS.
Absolutely frustrated that there was not support for women trying to conceive naturally. Regardless, you know, PCOS is a big part of it, but also for couples who are trying to conceive naturally, there was nothing. They're told by their GPs initially, you know, go away, keep trying, and then it's this push into IVF, which there's this big gap. There's this big back gap where so much can be done with natural fertility, but we're ignoring those.
Yeah, women. And that's where we felt the real synergy was with
absolutely,
you.
Absolutely, 100%.
And that's why we love working with Kate so much, because she's really aligned to our sort of values
doing,
and everything that we want to do, because we believe there is so much you can do, and it's about raising awareness of those things.
So alongside a specific issue like PCOS, we've obviously got one of the worst diagnoses that people can have when they're trying to conceive, which is unexplained infertility.
Yeah. That's really
and if people are listening and they've been trying, and maybe they've had some element of testing done and they've been given this subfertility, unexplained infertility diagnosis, what can they gain from the guide?
So we've developed these 5 steps, which really, regardless of your situation, anyone can take that information and use it. I guess Kate could probably explain a bit more about unexplained infertility in her sort of practice, but a lot of that information in terms of preparing your bodies, that will only help you get make sure you time it right. That's going to help you. Then we talk about, step 3 is talk about the products. So we're raising awareness of the products you can use, but not also raising awareness of products, but raising awareness of finding the right product for you. And then we also talk about how stressful it can be trying for a baby, no matter what your situation is or how long you've been trying. And we want to sort of tell people that that's really normal. And because a lot of people don't talk about fertility in their fertility journey, they may feel quite alone, but it can be really stressful. And I think because we're always taught how not to get pregnant, and we kind of believe that when we do try to get pregnant, we're going to get pregnant straight away.
Yeah.
So when it doesn't happen straight away, it can feel like a shock.
It is frustrating because there's no answer, there's nothing that can be fixed. Yet, there's kind of more recently, people have been talking about the fact that it's only unexplained because they actually can't find a reason.
Exactly.
Probably is a reason, but we just haven't got the science.
It's like when they say everything's viral. It's viral infection.
Yeah.
It's like they don't know. Like the research, we don't have.
Well, the other
thing
is that I think we need to sort of take into account is the NHS states that in a given month you've got 20% chance of getting pregnant.
Mm.
And it's absolutely normal for it to take you up to a year.
Well, by 12 months, 80% of couples have conceived, which is a big amount, isn't it, really? But there's still that 20% that haven't.
Yeah, I mean, it's that. So in the first sort of 12 months of trying, it can take up to 12 months.
12 months of 80% is couples having regular sex.
Yeah,
yeah,
and that's considered
and
every
that's
sort of
issue.
2 to 3 days. And
yeah.
That's something that I think is really interesting, because we feel like, and that in terms of what we're doing and when we talk to our friends and our colleagues, that everyone feels really busy.
Mm.
Life feels, you
know,
we live in this digital
world. Yeah,
my
own personal experience. Like, I was e-commerce director at AO, and, you know, I managed a team in Germany and the UK. I was flying overseas a lot. And,
so
I remember,
I hope you don't mind me sharing, but we were talking about, you were trying to plan your flights
around
ovulation.
Yeah, I was trying to plan business trips around when I thought I was going to ovulate, which is really stressful.
Well, it's stressful. The job's stressful in itself, and trying to time it around ovulation, but that's if one of you works away. If two of you work away, it's getting more and more difficult.
Yeah.
And
so we've got
this with my patients when they'll say, you know, they're working different shifts, or, you know, one is away out of the country, and actually that time, because it's only that small window, isn't it, of ovulation, that 12 to 24 hours, and obviously your fertile time around that, but it's still only a small, and when you think about that, I think, how does anyone ever get pregnant?
And
of course we do.
There's more people having babies in their 30s compared to 20s now. Like, we've seen this shift to, like, women having children later in life, and you know, we have got full on lives, we've got full on jobs. They say like have sex every 2 to 3 days, and it, do you know what? If you can do that, that's amazing. But I think realistically, for a lot of couples, that's
so that's not... when. So what we say when we when, if you pick up our guide, we say if you have just started trying and you want a really relaxed approach, having sex every 2 to 3 days, then you're likely to catch your fertile window, mm-hmm. which commences 5 days before ovulation, includes the day of ovulation, so that's a 6 day window. But if you have sort of more sort of challenges in your life, you're sort of traveling, or if you just want to be a bit more proactive and you're really keen to capture that fertile window, that's when the products can be helpful.
Yeah.
If you want to pinpoint ovulation, some of the fertility monitors that kind of come under the umbrella of femtech that sort of track your cycle and help you understand more about your body, some of those can help you identify more fertile days per cycle.
In the over 180 podcast episodes that I've made where I've spoke to a lot of fertility experts, the most common issue that most experts say about when couples are trying to conceive is not having enough real sex.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
And it's before even having to walk through a fertility
door. It's interesting, isn't it? Because going back to what Kate was saying about this, you ovulate on day 14. Mm. And from some of our conversations we've had with some of our customers is... there is a bit of a myth that people ovulate mid-cycle. Some people can ovulate late in their cycle.
Even with a 28-day cycle, you can still ovulate a lot later on day 14.
So I guess if you've been trying for a while, you may want to understand a bit more about when you ovulate. And there are tools out there to help you do that. Yeah. And that's a personal decision.
But I think with long cycles, so PCOS, for example, having the ability to track your cycles on your fertile window... with PCOS is giving you information that is like gold dust, absolute gold dust, because it's so difficult to identify the fertile window and ovulation with that type of cycle.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think as well, like when we talk to men, you know, the men's view is they don't like to be told when they have to have sex. So it's like you're trying to identify when you're fertile, then you're trying not to make it really blatantly obvious to your partner.
And you want to keep the romance.
The time is now. But so you know, if they're tired, they're stressed, then in the end you have to say, I'm ovulating, this is the right time. And you know, there's that pressure to perform, which men really struggle with sometimes.
Yeah, and we address that in the guide. And the other thing, there's a bit of a myth that some guys think that if they store up their sperm, that when they do ejaculate, that they will have super sperm. But really, you should be...
You need to empty your load, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. So... once the sperm leaves the production factory, it should be stored for a maximum of sort of 2 to 3 days. And that sort of ties in with having that regular sex every 2 to 3 days.
So if you're leaving it too long, you're getting the worst. You're not getting the good sperm. Stale sperm.
And also, I read some really...
stale sperm.
That sounds gross. I read some really interesting research just a couple of weeks ago about the fact if you have regular sex, the uterus gets used to the presence of sperm, so doesn't view it as a foreign body.
That's really interesting.
Whereas if you have infrequent sex, then the uterine environment isn't as accepting to sperm.
And I do understand there is some research going on about sperm allergy at the moment, I think in Manchester, which is creating a little bit of interest. Mm. But the other thing is that I think we all forget, sex makes us feel really good. All the endorphins that are released, it's really good for us to have sex. But I think when you're trying for a baby, you kind of forget that, and it becomes really focused on baby making.
It becomes more like a chore, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, ladies, it's been very insightful hearing about what you've put together, and we will, of course, put all the Dr. Fertility info on the show notes for this chat. One thing that Kate and I have been asking our guests is what you would ask... what one bit of advice would you give your younger, more fertile self? And it's meant to be applicable whether you've had fertility struggles or not, but knowing what you know now from what you do, what would you say?
Okay, so I think for me, I recently got asked a question that got me thinking, that when I was single, did I feel pressure from society to have a baby? And I think perhaps I did on a subconscious level at the time and didn't actually realise that, but... after learning more about being a solo mum, the options other people are saying, I think that when I was single, if I had known more about that option, I'd have felt really empowered. Mm-hmm. And I think I might have enjoyed my single time a bit more and felt more...
Without the pressure.
Yeah, and I think I'd have felt more in control of my fertility. And I really wish that I'd had that education earlier on.
Yeah, I agree.
For me, I think it's just that education piece about understanding the impact of age on fertility and, you know, and it's making those informed decisions, not just for myself, but for my, like, my friends as well, just to better understand. You know, I've always been a career person. I've had, you know, senior roles, and just understanding the impact of delaying starting a family.
But also, we find it really interesting that it's not just women that have a biological clock.
Yes, yeah.
That for guys, age can also affect their fertility, which we've learned from working with Professor Alan Pacey.
Which is not really well known, you know.
No,
everyone seems that men can carry
everyone
on.
Talks about Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah, carry on consecutively on your 80s, 90s.
And it doesn't mean to say they can't.
But it's harder to be harder.
But after the age of 40, what the research suggests is that the sperm is less healthy, it doesn't swim as well, the size and shape isn't as good. And that doesn't always affect conception, but it sometimes can increase risk of miscarriage. And that's something, again, to be aware of.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, ladies.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having us.
Well, I know that's a bit of a different one for you, Kate, because you're kind of quite involved working with doctor's facility ladies, but that type of information being available in the time that you've been working with your clients and answering the questions that they're asking you, this kind of resource and these products being available, have you seen that kind of pickup from your kind of community? Have you seen that people are realizing that there is really trusted, valid information out there now?
Absolutely. I think I'm finding that women are realizing more and more that Dr. Google is not where they need to be going, and finding that really reputable, credible source is so vital. And I always put my patients Dr. Fertility Way, because their information is so credible, and it's trustworthy, 100% trustworthy. It's just an amazing resource.
And we mentioned the Cycle Savvy campaign that you have done with Dr. Fertility, so we'll put the details of that in the show notes. Just remind people how they follow you on your socials.
On Instagram, I'm Your Fertility Journey.
Have we ditched that?
We've ditched the underscore.
See if I mentioned it enough. And I'm at Fertility Poddy. And also, we mentioned you with your PCOS expertise. And part of what Kate and I are hoping to create in this show that we're doing on a regular basis is I'm going to be extracting Kate's expertise as her background as a fertility nurse is so vital to the conversation, as well as us talking to all these different people. But we really want to have that PCOS chat. And what we encourage you to do, if you've got any questions, is to email in to talkfertility@gmail.com, whether they're about the show so far, because it's a new show and we've covered a small amount of the plethora of fertility topics that we're going to be touching on, but especially with the PCOS side of things, because that's a big passion of yours, isn't it?
Yeah, so any questions, we'd love to read them, so please send them in.
There's more. If you've been listening to this new Talk Fertility show since we launched, hopefully you've realised that what I've been doing as host of the Fertility Podcast is delving into my archive, because I've made over 180 episodes, to share with you the content and hopefully signpost you back to the fertilitypodcast.com website, where there's a whole host of conversations already existing as Kate and I continue to make more. We are chatting to lots more fascinating people over the coming weeks and months, and we're, as we said, always really keen to hear your thoughts. And I wanted to have a look to see one of the expert chats that I might be able to share with you that was quite concise, because often when I start talking to fertility experts, there's so many questions that I and you quite possibly have. And this next chat is exactly what I wanted it to be. It was a really interesting conversation I had with Alpesh Doshi, who is an embryologist who has created his own fertility clinic, which is quite unheard of. The embryologists are normally hidden away doing the science bit. So have a listen to Alpesh, because I think you'll be really interested in his point of view.
My name is Alpesh Doshi, and I'm a consultant embryologist and a director of IVF London, a newly opened IVF centre in Northwest London and Hertfordshire region. And I'm passionate about embryology, and I'm going to be talking more about the embryology elements today.
And I was keen to hear your motivation, Alpeshi, as an embryologist to set up a clinic, because it's pretty unusual. We know of embryologists of being the masters, like the magicians in the labs, doing all the incredible work, often the unsung heroes. I mean, in the 40 years of IVF, when we hear about Jean Purdy, when we hear about Steptoe & Edwards, I only learned about Jean Purdy, you know, this year, and the amazing work she did. So the decision as an embryologist to take that step into creating a clinic yourself, how did that come about?
So it's a very good question. The motivation to firstly develop a clinic stemmed from the confidence that I am good at what I do, which is clinical embryology. And we all know that, as you rightly said, that embryologists are generally the unsung heroes behind the scene. But there is more of an awareness now from a patient perspective as to where success rates are stemming from. And it's no secret that a lot, you know, if you do have a good laboratory with good embryology practices, that's where the results actually come from. So in order for a clinic to be successful, it's very important that they have a good laboratory and a good embryologist that's leading it. I've had phenomenal experience at leading a very high-end fertility clinic in my journey as an embryologist. I had a great inclination to one day being able to open my own clinic, whereby I combine various aspects of clinical and scientific excellence in what we do today, but most importantly, try and do something whereby it's really benefiting the couple, not only in their ability or their chances to conceive, but most importantly, giving them a very good journey through IVF, or at least a very informative journey through IVF. So the ethos with which I started this journey was, yes, I want to do something. If I don't do it now, I'll never be able to do it. And hence last year, we started embarking on this journey and really wanted to make a difference in terms of the way IVF is currently offered in today's world.
So I'm very keen in the work that I do with the podcast in highlighting the importance of that kind of mind-body connection, the importance of well-being. We hear a lot about the emotional strain going through treatment, and I know it's something that you've put at the forefront of how you're working to make that experience, being a smaller clinic and being a new clinic. You also want to help educate people in how best they can achieve a pregnancy ultimately, don't you?
Absolutely. So one of the most important things that sits very close to my heart is, as I have mentioned, the journey of the patient. We believe at IVF London that the result is a byproduct of the whole process. And of course, you've got to be good at what you do, whether that's from the clinical front or the scientific front. But the most important thing that we forget as clinicians working in IVF is that by the time the patient has reached out to you, there's already a lot of stress that has built up for them to even come to your doorstep seeking fertility treatment. So it's very important to address this before they start. Now, in terms of the mind, body, spirit, and the well-being of the patient, I'm very passionate about this because I have really learned from my experience dealing with fertility patients for over the last 20 years and engaging with them that one of the most important things they feel very vulnerable at is the support, especially the support from a clinic who's holding their hand through the journey of IVF. And this is one area that I really want us to strengthen, not just as an individual clinic, but as a fraternity, as a community who offers IVF, to see the patient as a human being, someone who is actually dealing with emotions, how we can help them, how we can support them better through the journey. And this is the focus of our clinic, that before the patient starts the journey, we want them to be very much in control of all the knowledge and education surrounding the cycle, what's going to be happening at every stage, being able to phone them quite regularly after every appointment to say that, can we do anything? Is there anything you need further information on? I feel that the moment the patient understands the journey very well and feels empowered enough from the education perspective, and obviously the emotional support perspective, they are much more well prepared to handle the stresses of fertility treatment. And let's face it, it is a stress. You know, it is an invasion on a couple's life to try and have fertility treatment. And we are here, or we should all be here, to try and make this journey as comfortable as possible for the couple and as stress-free as possible.
Now, we're talking in the UK where we have this postcode lottery issue. We're talking in an area in the UK where there isn't any NHS funding available for this kind of treatment. So we're talking about a paid-for service that people are ultimately coming for. And we know that patients are more likely to have to pay, sadly, due to that decrease in funding on the NHS. And therefore, patients should be able to get the best value for their money, ultimately. And I know that's one of the things that you want to highlight, but I'm keen to just talk about that kind of support and that importance for people to know that they can expect that kind of treatment. You know, at the end of the day, we've just talked about the emotional toll that this type of treatment takes from you, especially if you don't have success. Therefore, you are completely within your right, and especially if you're listening outside the UK as well, you are completely within your right to get that feeling of being supported from the outset. And if you don't, you don't have to go there. You have that ability to make a different decision, don't you?
Absolutely, Natalie. It's very important to firstly make sure that we offer good, affordable fertility care. And we all know that in the UK, the postcode lottery is something that either has helped patients to conceive in terms of NHS treatment, and there's a lot of areas that are now withdrawing funding and a lot of CCGs that are withdrawing funding for fertility treatment. Now, one of the main objectives that we have here at IVF London is to make sure that we do offer good fertility care. And it's not just in the UK. I feel very passionate about, I come from Africa myself, from Kenya, and for many years, whilst I have grown up as a child, I have seen that people who could afford to have treatment would go abroad to have treatment simply because there was no good care available locally. And this is generally in healthcare, not just fertility. And I believe it is almost a human right to have good healthcare at your doorstep. And what we're trying to do here is we're one of the very few clinics in this part of Hertfordshire, and we really want to offer good, affordable care to the patient at a very reasonable price. So our price tags are very thought through. We want to make sure that there is no add-ons, which is really affecting the whole or bumping up the whole cost factor for the patient. We're very transparent on what a cycle is going to cost the patient right from the beginning. And most importantly, there is no charges for all the support that we've talked about, such as fertility coaching. Fertility coaching is a very integral part of what we do here at IVF London, and it starts off with that, whereby we assign a coach to a couple who will be talking and supporting them through the journey, and there is no fee to this, and it's all paid for by us.
And when we were talking about it earlier, you were explaining that there's that kind of holistic approach to it. There's nutritional support, kind of well-being aspects like yoga. I mean, it just sounds exactly all the different bits and bobs that you'd like and maybe don't think about and wouldn't maybe indulge yourself in because you're so focused on this goal of ultimately becoming a parent. And I'm a big fan of those additional things helping you be at ease, if possible, through this process. And I think it's great to hear that that's been thought out in what you're putting together.
Absolutely. So it's very important to understand that if you're going to try and address stress in a couple, you've got to try and find ways of how you can minimize stress. Mm. And we all know that whether it's work stress that we have, the only way we can unwind or relax is try and do things that we really enjoy. It's very difficult if someone asks you to say that, is this therapy going to improve my chances of getting pregnant? Then I think we have to very responsibly say that, well, there's little evidence. So if someone asks me that, is reflexology going to help me get pregnant, or is acupuncture going to increase my chance of getting pregnant? We have to be responsible in saying that, well, we need to look at the evidence for it. But the most important thing I always tell patients that, do you think that reflexology or massage or acupuncture is going to help you relax and de-stress? And if they say yes, that this is something that's quite I quite enjoy, or yoga, for example. You touched on yoga. One thing that we're trying to do at IVF London is try and organize you know, yoga sessions for our patients on a weekend, live cookery or nutrition demonstrations by leading experts who've worked in the field of nutrition and fertility for a long time. So we're trying to do things that we believe are going to help patients unwind and de-stress and accept us better as their family outside of their family, because they're spending a lot of time in their journey of IVF with us. So if they don't feel comfortable or if they feel stressful during their visits, this is not a good start to begin with. So the whole aim of providing all this additional support, whether that comes in the form of massage, acupuncture, reflexology, yoga, nutrition, is also that the patient feels that there is tools for them out there to embrace so that they can feel more comfortable in our environment.
And it's part of the care, which we were talking about, that key word. And you've come from London. We're just outside London. If you're listening outside of the UK, what I hope this makes you think is that, okay, maybe I could find something like this near me, these kind of alternative approaches to providing this type of treatment. And considering we're talking in December, the end of the 40th anniversary of IVF, a lot more conversation, I think, has happened around this topic. I've seen a real shift over the last few years of the ways the kind of mainstream press have been talking about IVF and infertility, and maybe giving a more realistic voice rather than just the successes and celebrity successes. They have been talking more about the failures. They've been talking more about the postcode lottery. There's still a lot more, obviously, to be done. Where do you see, as an embryologist who's now taken on a clinic for a new year, where do you see the future of where we're at going? Do you think there's going to be some interesting shifts? Obviously, we've got the funding cuts in the UK. There's a lot still happening in our general understanding in society of still of this type of treatment.
So, Natalie, in terms of where we should responsibly go with this, especially when the NHS is not paying as predominantly as it did for fertility treatment, I feel that educating our patients is very important, or even making all the awareness out there, or giving patients the tools to understand the aspects of treatment. So you very rightly said that all that patients really know is what the success rates are, but do they know the intricacies of what the journey is about? Do they know about, you know, that there could be a miscarriage potentially, even if they're pregnant? How to deal with such scenarios? Where does that take them in terms of, if they have faced a miscarriage, what should they do next in terms of accessing further treatment, etc.? So I think it's very important for us as specialists offering this treatment, where we know that it's going to be self-paying, a lot of it is going to be self-paying, to make sure that patients are very well informed and they understand the concepts and fundamentals very well about the whole journey and its outcomes. And I think once the patient feels fully informed and in control, and I use that word in control because that's very important from a patient's perspective who's, you know, either paying or not paying, but they need to be in control with the understanding and the knowledge. So I think fertility education is very important, not just for patients who are trying to get pregnant, but for people in general. What is fertility education? How can we try and empower men, women with everything that they need to know about fertility, whether that is in their corporate workplace, whether that's about funding provided by their corporate workplace, or whether it's just the knowledge in general that when should a woman consider egg freezing, for example? You know, we hear of a lot of women saying, oh, I never even knew about egg freezing, and you know, now it's a bit too late. So as we really have a responsibility to make sure that we create more awareness about fertility problems, fertility solutions, whether that's in the form of IVF or pre-implantation genetics. But whatever we have in our hands needs to be talked about in a very literal way, positive way, and of course a very educational way as well, so that people understand the pros and cons of everything that could potentially either be offered to them or sold to them in the form of treatment.
And for people listening, as we're ending a year and starting a new year, and maybe they found out that there is an issue, a piece of advice that you'd give for people entering into this challenging time when you're amongst family and there's questions asked and maybe you're trying to get some headspace to decide what you're going to do in the new year, what would your thoughts be?
So it's a very good question. Of course, I come from a cultural setting whereby it can always be considered as a stigma not to have a child, or being, there's almost that awareness out there that a couple's trying and they haven't been able to conceive, and you know, people generally start questioning, family starts questioning about it. So my advice for the new year is that firstly, if you feel that you are suffering some form of subfertility, I don't like calling it infertility, some form of subfertility, always realize and be reassured that there is help there. Whether that's in the form of emotional help, just help in terms of advice on what should be the next steps. I feel do not leave it in your mind as something that's continuously affecting everything that you're doing, whether that's at work, because of course we know that when a couple's trying, the stress of not being able to conceive plays on their mind all the time. So my only suggestion would be try and seek immediate help. Try and get through the channels, either through your GP of getting some tests done, whether that's on the male side or female side. Get referred. It doesn't cost much to get an evaluation done of your current fertility status. For females, we have a fertility wellness check where we check their, you know, some hormones through the blood test and maybe a scan as well, which gives a very real-time opinion on where the fertility potential of that lady is at. And for male, it's a simple semen analysis. So I really think that that's where it should start at. If a couple is worried about their fertility, get the help, get the basic investigations done and get the ball rolling.
Be sure to check out the show notes for this episode, which you can find at ukhealthradio.com, and you can find out mine and Kate's details, as well as our guests, Dr. Fertility and Alpesh, who you just heard there. We really, really want to hear from you. Please don't hold back. No question is too simple, too stupid. Just email talkfertility@gmail.com, and be sure to check out our new show out next Monday. And up next is the Robert Scott Bell Show.